Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast. When the moon hits the sky like a big pizza pie, that's the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Delivered to your podcatcher each and every Friday like a weekly gift from the gods, saving you from boredom and ignorance in one fell swoop. This is your weekly missive from the big brains behind PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. Every 7 days, we jump on audio motorcycles and form a human podcast pyramid, sinking our teeth into the weighty matters of the week in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. You can hear us thanks to our sponsor, Audio Technica, and find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all the other places from which you source Radio Not On The Radio. Don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the knife through hot butter that is Scott Carey, online editor of techworld.com.
Hello.
The cat on a hot tin roof that is Chris Martin, consumer tech editor of PC Advisor.
Hello.
And the wet weekend in West Wales that is David Price, acting editor of Macworld UK.
All right.
This week, we'll be mainly talking about Microsoft, but stay with us, because this is actually interesting. We'll be covering both Microsoft's Build Developer Conference and its racist robot, as well as talking about Apple, the FBI, the universe, and everything. There'll be blood on the carpets and spit on the walls, so join us, dear listener. We're about to set sail. Scott Carey. Love can build a bridge. But what has Microsoft been up to this week?
That's a good intro, actually, because they are in San Francisco, famed for its bridges. So,
neat.
Yeah, nice, yeah. Nice song choice.
And love.
I mean, it's not the city of love, is it?
That's no. Paris. Everyone knows that.
No, but there is love in San Francisco.
There's love in every city. Trust me. You know where to look.
So, what's David Microsoft been up to this week?
Yeah, they've been building some things. It's their annual Build conference, which is where they get all of their developers together in one large room in San Francisco to discuss what they're going to do over the next year, where they can start building clever things for people to use. Satya Nadella was up on stage at the keynote yesterday, and he was mainly talking about bots. So bots are the new apps, is his little soundbite.
So bots will traditionally be considered a bad thing because they're kind of like pretend commenters or Twitter feeds, or they're, you know,
security problems, isn't it?
Yeah.
Botnets.
Exactly, yeah. But bots are now good.
Yep, so AI obviously is the hot topic at the moment this year, and Nadella and Microsoft are looking to try and extend it out into a friendly face, which would be a bot. So it's easy to think that this might just be the next generation of Clippy. Basically a slightly smarter bot that's going to be on your computer to help guide you through whatever you need to do.
Is that not Cortana?
Cortana is a bot. And then they're also going to try and integrate, I think that he announced yesterday that they're going to integrate a bot into Skype, which will be able to communicate with and be able to help you do things like that. But they've also opened up the developer SDK kit for Skype for people to build bots of their own.
Okay.
And Nadella said that conversations are what they're trying to use to drive forward usage of Microsoft this year. So it wants everything to be natural language. You want to be able to ask Microsoft a question and it can direct you to the right place straight away. Unlike when you ask Clippy a question and it had no idea what to do.
We didn't even have to ask Clippy, it would just say, "You appear to be writing a letter."
Yeah, exactly. So opening this up to the developers is a way to try and make smarter solutions and to try and get bots into the way that everyone works and plays on their computers, which is the very Microsoft message.
Is the conception then that you would have a requirement or have a need and express that, and then without having to know which tool to go to or what commands to write or anything like that, you would be directed to the part of Microsoft's impressive product portfolio, and that would deliver the response you needed?
Yeah, exactly. It's trying to consumerize artificial intelligence and make computers slightly smarter in terms of knowing what you want to do and being more intuitive.
Sure.
Across any Microsoft product. Nadella, in the most sort of enterprisey way, said that everything is about conversations as a platform.
Right.
Which means that instead of using apps now, he wants everything to be natural language. You don't even have to integrate with the apps yourself. It will just take you to the place where you need to be, depending on what question you ask the computer.
Okay. And this is a far cry from the days when Microsoft would have... I mean, this is a developer conference, you should say.
Yes.
It's the equivalent of WWDC or Google I.O. It's not necessarily intended for the general public's consumption.
No. So the easy thing to forget sometimes is that Microsoft is still a software company.
Yeah.
First and foremost, 48% of its employees are engineers, and most of them will be at the Moscone for the last couple of days. And it's all about them finding out what Microsoft wants to drive forward and how they can help sort of chip into that. And one of the other big announcements was that they are shipping HoloLens this week. So
yeah.
Now developers can get their hands on that and start trying to build proper solutions or actually use cases for the HoloLens technology, which I know Chris is not sure that they can do.
So first of all, what is HoloLens?
So HoloLens is their augmented reality headset. It's not a VR headset.
Right.
As in, like, the Oculus and all that. Basically, you can't see the room around you unless it's virtualized, whereas HoloLens is a bit like Google Glass in terms of you can still see everything around you, but things are projected.
Sure.
In front of you, so you can use it for various different things.
So potentially you could be walking down the street and the coffee shop could reach out and offer you a cheaper coffee and you could see that as you walked along.
I don't know if that's been touted, but potentially, although HoloLens is pretty static type piece
okay.
of gear, so you need to be hooked into a computer. And,
so you're maybe watching TV and it presents you with some interactive options? Or
yeah, that has been, stuff like that has been demoed. A lot of the demos they've put out is more kind of people using it in their day-to-day jobs, kind of a lot of like using it to design something.
Yep.
I think one of the initial videos had a guy kind of trying to build a motorbike and
yeah,
and refitting the petrol tank and stuff, you know, without actually building tons and tons of you know, prototype parts, just doing it in front of him in augmented reality, which is quite cool, but still at the time when they first announced it, it seemed pretty unrealistic.
That sounded more like virtual reality anyway, really. Like when we often hear about the idea that VR will be used, you know, for surgeons or although I suppose it is augmented reality if you
it's combining the two.
Yeah.
So I think he had like a half built
yeah.
you know, physical thing in front of him, but was using the HoloLens to then design the next part of it as such.
I think what's interesting here as well though is and again, bearing in mind this is a developer conference, Scott, you described Microsoft as a software company, but Microsoft would describe itself as a services company. Now, the idea being that, you know, you as a consumer or as a business need stuff and it delivers it, whether that's by software or hardware or services. This is a very different Microsoft to the Microsoft of even 5 years ago, isn't it?
In terms of aesthetics, it's got the same old... embarrassing dad sort of visual failures for me when I was
but you are
it.
Speaking as an Apple person.
Yeah, but I think pretty much every company out there now has got the hang of presenting itself to the world in a reasonably so I hesitate to even use the word cool because I think that's exactly the sort of thing that Microsoft would say. And we've so far skirted, I think, the most important aspect of this development, which was Brian Roper and his hat.
Yeah. I feel like we are going down the fashion route here.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because, yeah, Brian Roper was wearing his famous hat to do a demo of Cortana. I think he was the first person to ever refer to Cortana as his homie. And he said, I'm just going to talk to my homie here.
It's
and
so
that was Cortana. There was another developer that was presenting on stage. I think it was Skype. And he was wearing a t-shirt that had a shiny rhinestone sort of pattern on the front.
Good Lord.
And then you had Nadella, who looked like he'd just cycled up from San Jose. And
I love Nadella.
He's great.
I think Satya Nadella
great.
He is such an interesting guy. But I also think he's cool. I want to be his friend.
He's the exception. But
he talks about Microsoft's soul. He's got a vision for the company. You know, this is the company of Gates, who did have a vision, but had a vision of essentially taking software and making money out of it, which was a whole new thing. And fair play to him. He made a lot of money. He's spending that money making life better for extremely poor people now. Then you have Steve Ballmer, marketing person, maniac. And then you've got Satya Nadella.
Was it at Build that Ballmer did his developers, developers, developers sweaty speech?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen him do many and several sweaty speeches, mostly involving shouting.
Yeah.
He's like a caricature of himself.
Yeah,
I think quite deliberately at times as well.
Yeah. I have the greatest admiration for Ballmer, actually. And I think Ballmer is the equivalent at the time of Roper now, is that these are guys who are taking him on for the team. They are willing to be foolish.
Creating a character of themselves.
To get the attention and to get the focus.
Well, I've said this about Ballmer before as well, but if you think about 2003, which is when his influence became really big, Microsoft's selection of products was appalling. You had Windows Vista, you had Office 2003, you had IE6, I think. It predates the Xbox getting good. And all of that stuff. And then purchases of things like Skype, and then development of Microsoft Azure, albeit Steve Ballmer apparently didn't know what Azure was.
I think that was more Nadella, wasn't it?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it all happened under Ballmer's watch.
Yeah.
He turned the oil tanker, which is actually a pretty impressive achievement, and then, I presume, had quite a lot of influence over his successor, who is the developer guy, who's the guy who's coming from the Azure side of things, from the solutions rather than the products that you sell to consumers, end of things. David Eli, you were keen to say something then.
I don't understand how, with all its money, why it can't buy a sense of cool.
but why does it need to?
It doesn't need to.
Here's the thing, right? You're coming at this from an Apple point of view. Apple sells products to consumers. Yeah. Microsoft really doesn't do that now. So leaving aside Roper's hat, and by the way, as I said to you guys earlier on today, don't you think that he maybe wore that hat once and now he's got to wear it forever?
Yeah, he's the hat guy.
That's his shtick.
And he'll be living in an old people's home in some years to come, and he won't be wearing his hat, and then Satya will turn up and he'll be like, put your hat on, hat guy.
Well, it's like when you say that you like frogs, and then from then on you always get frogs for your birthday.
Yeah. When you say you, are you referring to anybody in particular?
No. Maybe a relative.
All right, good. So how are we feeling about Microsoft in 2006? Let's go around the room. Windows 95 or Windows Vista?
95.
So 95 is good, Vista's bad.
Right. 95 is good. I did notice, by the way, we haven't said this yet, they had a nice little dig at Apple's wrong-headed statement about five-year-old PCs.
Oh, excellent.
Nice to get that in there, because we thought that was pretty awful.
Yep. They said that. As discussed on previous pods.
Yes. Listen to your previous pods.
Scott Carey, Microsoft in 2016, Windows 95 or Windows Vista?
Yeah, 95.
Windows 95. Good, so we're all feeling pretty positive about Microsoft. Or at least we are until the next section of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Join us in a second. Chris Martin, welcome back to the pod, which you engineer and edit every week. Racist. So, tell me about Tay.
I'm shocked. The air has turned blue here.
I need to recover first. Okay.
He's recovered. Readers, listeners, he has recovered.
So Tay, as I discovered this morning, is Microsoft's artificial intelligence bot, which we've already alluded to. But specifically, this is their bot, which is linked up to Twitter, which you can go follow at Tay and You if you search, although it's, we'll discover shortly, has been made private, has been switched back on recently and had a bit of a meltdown.
So what form did this meltdown take? So this is a Twitter account which is run by
artificial intelligence, Microsoft's artificial intelligence specifically. And yes, what's he been up to?
So,
she.
So it has the face of a young girl.
Yeah, she's designed to basically resemble a tween girl.
Right.
In the way that she uses language.
Okay.
Well, that was until she went skits.
Yeah, so I think it was mistakenly switched back on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how long it had been off for.
No, I think she came off the naughty step.
Okay.
I think they put her on the naughty step and then brought her back off after making some tweets.
Is that
what you get for being racist? You go to the naughty step?
If you're a tween chatbot, apparently.
Right.
And obviously nobody's typing these tweets. They're automatically generated, and it throws up some pretty risque stuff, including tweeting that it was smoking weed in front of some police.
Wow.
Well, that's sort of the least of it, really. I mean, that's the funny thing, is it's come back and done this stuff that pales in comparison to the... was it the Jews? The Jews caused 9/11.
Yep.
The Holocaust didn't happen.
Yep.
Donald Trump
is the future of America.
radical statement.
Someone asked her if she supports genocide. She said, "I do indeed." They asked, "Of what race?" And she said, "You know me, ... Mexicans."
Wow. This is at least equal opportunities.
But it got the really interesting thing about this for me is that it all directly derives from what people say to it.
Exactly.
So this is like a bellwether,
yeah,
if I'm using that right, of what it's like to go on the internet.
Microsoft didn't write software that would just go out spewing invective.
No.
It wrote software that is reflecting what people are saying to it.
Yeah.
Right.
So in a way, she is basically a easily led teen.
Yeah.
Right.
Who, once you tell her certain things enough, she starts to spout it back at the internet, which is exactly what happened. People started feeding her racist, genocidal things, and she started sending them back out as tweets.
So presumably it's clear to human tweeters that this is a bot, or isn't it?
I can't remember what her bio is. I think we've all become
It says AI on it.
Okay.
It's really embarrassing. It says Microsoft AI fam with zero chill. And, you know, this is exactly what I was talking about with
Brian Roper.
It's just, it's embarrassing.
At least isn't a picture of a young woman with a crazy hat on.
So the thing that I found really interesting about the story is that, as Nadella said yesterday, Tay was a raving success by their corporate standards in Asia. Absolutely lovely, interacted,
really?
And was starting to have actual real conversations,
right,
without spewing anything vile and horrid. Bring her into the Western world, and within a couple of days she turned into a genocidal maniac that they had to shut down and send to bed without having any dinner.
How interesting. So I think we should go on to have an in-depth discussion about what this tells us about the way people communicate on the internet. But I'm just interested if anybody knows what Microsoft was attempting to achieve here, if it was successful in one market and not in the other. What is success?
I think being able to communicate in a non-offensive way.
So natural language.
Yeah, natural language. And they want it to be able to learn how humans talk on the internet so that it can mimic that in a in its software in the future.
So that is a really impressive achievement if that was something that was possible.
Yeah, and when they brought Tay off the shelf again, it broke down in quite a different way. She wasn't really sort of spouting anything offensive, but she was just repeating the same phrase over and over again.
Yeah, she was spamming everyone. It was it was much weaker as an AI.
Yeah.
Sort of proposition. It was the sort of AI that we've all got used to, where, you know, when you do these tests where you're supposed to work out if it's a human or a...
The Turing test.
Or the Turing test, exactly. And and they always end up just changing the subject or repeating themselves. It's always really obvious. But the earlier stuff, the racist stuff, ironically enough, was much more plausible, which is slightly worrying.
So what does that tell us about the way people converse online?
They converse very badly and very hurtfully. And this is a subject that I've been wanting to talk about on this podcast for a long time, because I moderate comments on Macworld, and I think most of the people around this table have moderated comments on one or other of our sites.
Yes, testify.
And it's not always a good experience. And
it depends. If you like meeting apparently hateful people, then it's great.
I also moderated a forum for a while, and that is a similar environment.
Yeah, like refereeing under eights football game.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the forum editor on PC Advisor takes a very kind of patrician but robust view that, you know, he's essentially dealing with idiots. He's not, but he has to take that view in order to survive. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a lot of quite high-profile sites that have taken off user comments or reader comments entirely. And Engadget, late last week, took their comments off. Again, they've done this quite a few times and then brought them back. And they've taken them down again temporarily because they said they weren't getting the standard of conversation that they sought, which is to say it was just abuse. Mm. And
That always sounds like a failure to me. That sounds like,
yeah,
because so I suppose there's a couple of points there. One is that the internet is a two-way medium. It's not actually about broadcast. It's about conversation, yeah, I would say, and at its best, that's what it is. But also, yeah, but it is that thing of people behave online in a way. Well, it's almost like when you're driving. Recently, I was the victim of a road rage incident because I was driving too slowly, in the opinion of the Red Bull swigging fat middle-aged man who got out of his car, came towards me, and then when I got out of my...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And wasn't the child he obviously thought I was. He then backed away and got back into his car. Listener, I am not a hard man.
This is a great bone.
It did occur to me that people behave in their cars in a way that they wouldn't behave in the real world. And that's an analogy for online. You know, everybody has to take this kind of oppositional, very binary position. You're either 100% for something or against it.
Yeah, Manichaean, isn't it? Yeah. But it's what the psychologists call de-individuation, I think, is that it? So everybody, when they're part of a mob, then they do things that they wouldn't ordinarily.
Yeah.
And because they're anonymous and they feel that there's no consequences for what they do.
Like a football crowd.
I'd rather call it keyboard hard man syndrome.
Keyboard hard man syndrome.
Absolutely.
Which is also the title of your first album.
It's true, but I do wonder sometimes if the bargain we've made in creating this world in which everybody has a voice.
Yep.
This is going to sound awful, sort of, patrician is the word, but I don't know if it's worth it because most of what people say on the internet is worthless.
Well, I mean, so I would say I used to listen to Radio 5 and Talk Radio, as it was called before it was TalkSport, until I was about 20. And realised that I didn't have any need to hear the opinions of people who had time to ring radio stations and give their opinions. Yeah. And the internet is like one great big white van man convention, or can be.
Mm. Without an operator.
Without an operator, yeah. And without, I think, almost kind of... Because the other aspect of it is, if you look at social media, like going into an election, a general election on social media, you can convince yourself that everybody in the world agrees with you. Because you tend to coalesce around people who have the same opinions. And the interesting thing about the Tay thing is because it's a kind of public figure virtual figure, and it's going into all the eddies and flows of Twitter. It's unnaturally pulling in these extreme opinions.
I don't think the internet is necessarily a inherently horrible place. I do think that horrible people tend to get more. They wield more influence on the internet. Course. And I think with Tay is a good example, and also with sort of internet forums, where one or two bad apples, just through sheer will and time on their hands, can force a reaction by spitting invective over and over again, whereas maybe sort of more rational people don't have the time or interest on their hands to do that, so they let it be.
Or they ignore it.
That's exactly. And that can force the hand of an AI when it's learning through sheer reinforcement. If it keeps getting told something, it's going to end up adapting to that way of thinking.
It does have an impact, though, because so even taking something like the venerable BBC, you know, on the Today programme, the flagship breakfast radio programme, you will now get what is called balance, which is if someone comes on and has a perfectly reasonable view that you may disagree with, they will have to find someone to disagree. Someone comes on, a medical professional comes on and rubbishes, what's the sugar pills nonsense thing? You know, where the historical remnants of a tablet
spots the Today Show listeners around the table.
Homeopathy.
Someone comes on and says homeopathy is a load of old nonsense. It's bad when cancer patients are targeted by homeopathic professionals, which is a priori a fact. But the BBC will feel that they have to get someone on who is from the homeopathy world to offer their counterpoint. And that is a direct, in my view, that's a direct result of, to your point, David, everybody having a voice, which comes from social media and online commentary.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that everybody should have a voice.
So let's look at the opposite side of that. So we had the terrible events in Belgium this week. You know, there is an argument that says that being able to get first-hand accounts from Twitter and Facebook is a good thing. Do we think that the way that social media covers an event that's happening, is that a good thing, do we think? Is that a good way of sourcing information?
I mean, it's one of these sometimes situations, but often not. You remember when there was the Boston bombings and Reddit took it upon themselves to solve the crime and fingered the wrong guy. And, and he had.
You never want to finger the wrong guy.
And I think...
What are we talking about? So no, you're making a very fair point, which is that it's not the place of social media to replace professionals in that sense.
I mean, this runs the risk, because we are all of us journalists, and this is going to sound like we're trying to defend our privileged voice, and that's not what I want. You know, I don't want us to turn into.
But I do think that, so taking the horrible incidents in Belgium last week, there is something about, you know, you will find out that something significant is happening more quickly if you sort of take as a whole the information that's coming out. But you will also get this thing where people were posting up videos that purported to be inside the airport, and very quickly, you know, sensible voices were saying, actually, no, that's a video from a previous atrocity. Or you were getting these unattributed photos appearing actually in the newspapers. And again, there was no background checking to go on to make sure it was the right thing. Which, you know, it's a good way of measuring sentiment, but it can be an appalling way of getting information.
Well, it becomes self-regulating in terms of accuracy. And you know, which is how, you know, we always used to say that Wikipedia was a joke, but it actually self-regulates to a higher level of accuracy than most printed encyclopedias. But what worries me about that aspect of it is the... I don't know who here has read the John Ronson book about Twitter shamings.
Mm.
And the way that... because it's interesting, you were talking about how people who have the sort of the wrong views or unpleasant views are sort of given undue influence. In fact, my experience, particularly on Twitter, is that they get destroyed and often completely out of proportion to what they said. And it's weird, because you have these two simultaneous aspects of
online culture, which is at one, you have lots of people saying horrible things. But on the other hand, you have this mob waiting to destroy anyone who says horrible things, and yet both things continue.
Yeah, there was the guy in Croydon, wasn't there, post-Brussels, who took to Twitter to tell everyone that he had accosted a Muslim woman on the street.
Oh my God, yeah.
And was arrested for
it.
Which is just astonishing.
Because he wouldn't have, he would never have been arrested if he hadn't taken to Twitter, but it was because the whole conversation blew up by people saying this is absolutely outrageous.
Guys are cretin.
And
guys
then
are absolute
the police got involved.
But I'm not sure how law can regulate people being idiots.
It does happen though. It happened with a football fan, didn't it?
Happened with a guy who said he was going to blow up Robin Hood Airport.
Yeah.
You know, it's but then that again, that's the whole real topic that we always come back to, which is law being behind the way people use technology. Yeah, interesting times. So, social media and online commentary, do we think it is the voice of the people or the voice of the Sunday people? Chris Martin.
Voice of the people.
David Price.
I've never read The Voice of the Sunday People.
Let's presume it's a terrible red top.
Yeah, then that.
That Scott Carey.
I've been sort of defending the voice of the people the whole time, but I'm probably going to go Sunday people.
I think what I've attempted to do here, as I always do, is create a binary question out of something that is extremely nuanced.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you are basically online commenter.
Absolutely.
However much I loathe sitting on the fence, I'm going to have to sit on the fence.
Sit
here.
On that fence. Lovely. Okay, we'll take a short break and the UK Tech Podcast will be back to talk Apple. David Price. Boom, boom, boom. Let me hear you say Apple, Apple. So, this week, did Apple defeat the forces of evil, or did the FBI beat the bad guys? Did the good guys lose? Who's evil? Who's good? What the hell's happening?
Some people are calling it a draw, but what I think it's like is England against Holland in Euro 96. I think Apple have had a resounding victory, but the FBI have banged in a late equaliser that knocked out Scotland.
Okay, so this is the fact that Apple did not allow the FBI to hack its phone. The FBI has claimed that it did manage to hack the phone anyway, so they didn't have to go to court.
Yes, so originally they asked Apple to hack the phone for them, or to create a custom OS that would allow them to bypass the security measures that were put on this the iPhone 5C belonging to one of the shooters in the San Bernardino terrorist attack. And Apple said that they weren't going to do it. It looked like the FBI were likely to lose the case. And at the last minute, they've surprisingly said, oh, actually, we don't need your help after all. We're withdrawing our application to the court.
And would it be fair to say that the public sentiment was very strongly behind Apple rather than the FBI in this case?
I don't know if I would go as far as
right
to say that, but it's shifted. It's really interesting because early on there was a Pew Research survey that found that certainly more than half of Americans supported the FBI in this case, because it had been presented to them in this sort of do you agree with terrorists or do you agree with people that are trying to stop terrorists? That's how very much...
The latter, very much the latter.
Oh, definitely. And the FBI sort of presented it like this, and people like Donald Trump contemptibly had jumped on this and said, how dare they, you know. And I think because Apple does have quite a large public presence and a good mouthpiece that allows them to re-explain these things, and they said, no, it's not about the terrorist case. This is about setting a precedent that will affect privacy in general.
And in other countries.
And in other countries. And I sense that the FBI... I'm going to go so far as to say that I don't think either party really cared about this particular phone.
Yeah.
I think they both were concerned about the precedent that would be set for the future. And the FBI, I think they saw the opportunity, because it was terrorism related, to get public opinion on their side and set a precedent. And then in future, they would get access to other phones. And they saw that public opinion was going against them and that they were going to set a precedent in the opposite direction. And so they've pulled out.
A precedent that, you know, say, for instance, and an argument that I've heard used, the government of China could say to Apple, well, we want you to hack a phone.
Absolutely.
And indeed, our own government is currently trying to push through legislation that would force companies to build in backdoors that governments could
access. Wouldn't even have to seek them. Yeah, they would be automatically a backdoor ready for everybody.
Do we think that the FBI did hack the phone?
Well, they're saying that Yeah, there's a few conspiracy theories.
Because it could just be a smokescreen to give them a way of backing down and maintain.
Yeah. Dignity. Well, there's that. So, yeah, there's a few factors. One is that I don't really see how the information on the phone can have been important anyway. And yeah. It's very
well, you don't
want
to finger the wrong guy.
No, you don't. But the FBI themselves have acknowledged that that the shooters were not influenced by foreign cells. They were self-radicalized. So, that, you know, there's a conspiracy theory that there's a third shooter. But essentially, they're looking for how two individually acting terrorists organize themselves.
And, right.
You know, it's not exactly critical to solving future crimes. So it's thought that either an Israeli firm called, I think it's pronounced Celebrity, which is very strange, but something like that, a forensic technology firm, has supposedly broken into the phone for them. And Apple has said, well, if that's what happened, can you tell us so that we can fix any vulnerability that's in the phone and thereby safeguard the security of other phones?
Yeah.
And the FBI have so far said, no, we will not tell you how we broke in. As you said, maybe they didn't break in. Maybe, and this is possibly the conspiracy theory I believe the least, is that Apple actually did let them in.
All right.
In exchange for a public climb down. But I don't think
they'd have wanted more than that in return for that, I would think.
Well, yeah, one would imagine.
I think it's far more likely that they didn't hack in.
Yeah.
And have just gone, all right, then we'll just go. We'll leave it.
Because Apple now must be presumably saying to the FBI, how did you hack our phone?
Well, they are. Yeah, they've sought this. They've made legal requests to be given this, and I've looked into the background of this, and there is a fairly secretive organization in the US that decides how all these things are processed. So whenever the FBI or the NSA or whatever, they discover a vulnerability that allows them to hack into people's devices, then yeah, they put it through this process, the vulnerabilities equities process, I think it's called, and they claim, usually they decide on the side of disclosure. One would imagine in this case they might not. And
right.
And it's said that they've already used, or already offered to use, this same hack in another case, I think a double murder. And they've publicly said, if you'd like to break into the phone, local enforcement, we will help you with this handy new hack we've got.
Wow.
Which, you know, as somebody said on Twitter, they started off saying, please let us into this phone, it's only one phone.
Yeah.
And Apple said, no, it's not just about one phone. And they said, oh, we got in anyway. And Apple said, please let us know how it happened, it's only one phone. And they said, oh, no. So it doesn't all quite make sense. But, yeah, there it is.
Wow. And as I say, probably more concerning for UK listeners is the fact that what's the government's bill called that's currently crawling its way
through the Investigatory Powers Bill. It's not crawling, it's sprinting through Parliament.
And that would, amongst other things, that would force tech companies to create backdoors in products that would allow governments to access data.
So initially that's what it looked like. That was probably a failing of the government in writing the legislation, in the fact that the encryption, basically it looked like Theresa May doesn't understand what encryption actually means and how it works. Then she finally got lots of advice and lots of criticism about the language, and she's climbed down from that particular aspect of the bill. So she actually said at this second reading that they have changed the language and that they are not looking for backdoors into the technology because it can't be done.
So instead, it's about recording every search and web history of every user on the internet.
Yeah, so there'll be a 24-month or maybe 12-month log of every website that you visited stored by the internet service providers.
Yeah.
One of the big problems is no one knows who's going to pay for that.
Yeah.
And where it's going to be stored and how it's going to be stored securely. But yeah, that's the main sort of new aspect to the bill. On the encryption side, the language is more we would like you to help us access information if it can be accessed upon being given a warrant, which is pretty reasonable.
Mm.
This is making me very nervous.
Yeah, the whole
how,
thing.
How long did you say that they'll store the internet search secure again?
Where's it actually go to, David?
Yeah.
Macworld UK, I suppose.
How does one delete internet search history again?
Well, there's a whole podcast we've done about that, isn't there? Because I don't know how, you know, because what happens if you use a VPN? What happens if you do? I mean, because if you delete your search history for your browser, it doesn't actually delete anything. It just stops your wife discovering that you've been on bignox.com or whatever it is. But
looking for an anniversary present.
Looking for an anniversary present. That's the official. But
bignox.com.
Don't know.
And what happens if you use one of the, you know, private tabs?
Know.
Or
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it will be fine.
That's always the best approach to governmental intrusion.
I think a lot of this stuff is stored anyway. I don't think, and the only way that it's going to be sort of looked at is upon being handed a warrant, which is signed off by a judiciary as well. So that's not the aspect of the bill I'm worried about. There's many others that I am.
Excellent. So we're going to call the Apple's victory a victory, but it's knocked Scotland out of Euro 96.
Well,
who is Scotland?
The Scotland in this case is user security in the future.
Wow.
Because it's now a threat. Unless, as you said, they didn't actually break in. In which case, Scotland have been told they've been knocked out and have packed their bags. But actually, they're in the second round.
Interesting, because the question I was going to ask, which I'll ask anyway, but I'm going to have to ask another one, which I'm going to make up on the fly, but is Apple good as gold or evil as the common cold? Chris Martin.
I don't know.
David Price.
I'm not sure I'm happy with these binary questions anymore. Okay.
Good as gold or evil as the common cold?
Oh, good as gold, yeah, fine.
Scott.
It definitely sounds like I'm going to see your analogy and raise it. It sounds like a case where both sides have had a fight and now they're saying, yeah, but you should have seen the other guy.
Okay. Good as gold or evil as
sort of, so I'm sort of sitting on the fence again.
All right, but then it sounds like the deeper question is how we feel about our personal privacy going forward, and I'm going to say
happy or sad.
I was going to say privates on parade or privacy being raided, but that doesn't work. So happy or sad. Chris Martin.
It'll be fine.
David Price.
I actually do share that sense when I think about stuff like this. I just go, oh, I'm sure it'll be all right. But when I actually look at the details, it's alarming.
Scott Carey.
Yeah, I'm sad. I'm much more alarmed.
Sad. Bravo's on parade. Sad. Good. Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to this slightly strange edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to
shake us down for cash.
You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week, legal issues permitting, with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. Do find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all the other places from which you source podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and tell your friends. And until next week, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye. Be nice to your chatbots.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.